he thinks this and he thinks that, and you know, or my husband thinks this or thinks that, and everyone thinks this about me. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm kind of scratching my head and just kind of listening to this, you know? And at some point I have to kind of point out, like, have they told you that? Did they actually yeah. say that to you? Well, no, but I just know that's what they're thinking. And it's like, yeah. whoa, pump the brakes, first off, because I'm not sure that, you know, that is exactly what they may be thinking. Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. Good evening and welcome back to the WFO Life Podcast. Chris, how are you tonight?
Doing good. I'm hoping tonight we're going to have a quick but meaty session with a fun topic that I've been really studying on, so it should be good.
Yeah, then this is a topic that you got from the program that you're in, right?
Yeah, it's this leadership program that I'm in with about 20 other people, and they're all veterans or Gold Star family members. So it's a pretty cool group of people, different ages. Some are retired military. I think I may be the only active duty. And then there's some like Gold Star family members and spouses, which is kind of, you know, interesting to have people that have gone through that kind of loss in their life. So it's a really cool group of people.
Well, sounds great. I'm ready to hear about it.
Yeah. So a big part of the program that they're having us do, which is I like it because it's counterintuitive to a, you know, select leadership program. They're doing a lot of, introspection, a lot of self-discovery on, you know, inward focused. It's not so much like, hey, here's how, you know, it's not, I guess, traditional leadership development as I would see it from a military perspective. But the good thing about it, there's a huge component about resiliency, and there's a month-long guided class that we're doing through a university, and I think it was designed really with things like we're dealing with right now in mind. I think it's something like resiliency in a, you know, in a chaotic environment or a chaotic world is, you know, something along those lines is the title. But what I mean, it's like I don't typically take notes, copious notes these days, since I'm not a traditional student anymore. But for this, I found myself, I was just like taking notes either with my phone or on paper as I was, you know, watching these online kind of self-paced classes. And there was so much good meat on those bones about, resiliency is a topic that I think it gets thrown around maybe too much. Right. Because and not in a good way. I mean, you know, resiliency is obviously a good thing, but coming from the background that I do and the way we see it is very different. A lot of times resiliency, use this term, it's kind of loaded, but it's thrown out in a little bit like a soft way, like, you know, hey, if this thing happens, you know, not that they're bad, but they're always, the first thing is like, oh, you know, do you need a grief counselor? Do you need, right. you know, it's like, hey, you know, there's things that happen in life that, you know, kids have to deal with or,
get
you know,
thicker
people.
Skin.
Yeah. And so I was a little hesitant when I heard resiliency, but getting into this class, it was very functional. And right. one of the things that we're going to talk about tonight that really struck me is these things called thinking traps. And it really quickly went down the road of anxiety and things that cause unnecessary anxiety and what what anxiety is. And one of the things they talked about were these thinking traps. And so I think the first thing we're going to do is go through these five thinking traps. And, you know, that may take most of our time. And then maybe on a follow-up podcast, we can talk about the strategies on how to combat these thinking traps in your life. So
right.
That makes sense.
Well, from what you've already described, it sounds, dare I say, like mastering self. You know, to be a good leader, you have to, you know, when you said they do a lot of self-reflection, well, leaders have to do that. So if you're being, you know, if you're trying to grow as a leader, if you're trying to grow as a professional or just be better in the world, you've got to figure out how and why you think what you do. You have to compare that against facts. And sometimes, and I know this to be true, so I'm pretty sure I'll have some feedback on several of these points, but people definitely can get caught in a thinking that isn't accurate. In other words, what thoughts they're having and reacting to the world with don't match reality. And
that can
come in many shapes and forms. And I know probably, you know, we'll go through some of the big ones, but there's probably I've heard and experienced or even dealt with multiple examples of such.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that are one of the styles of leadership that I know has become popular there's so many things about the leadership topic I hate because, you know, that's pretty much my business. But then you see things thrown out there. But there's things called it's a style of leadership called servant leadership, which is a good thing, obviously, because it's more outwardly focused, it's people focused. That besides the old school, you know, the Jack Welch, I guess, you know, style of CEO leadership, where like, hey, you know, I have the ideas, you execute the ideas, and we make profit for the company, and we move on. And servant leadership is more, hey, you know, you're there to serve the people, to develop them, and kind of build value in the company and in the business that way. But I think sometimes when you're too outwardly focused and focused on solving other people's problems, you neglect yourself, right? And similar to analogies we've given, like on an airplane, they say, hey, in the case of emergency, you know, put your mask on first before you help anybody else. And it's we've talked about it a lot. You know, you can't have no margin in your life and, you know, burn the candle at both ends and expect to be, you know, there for your kids as a father or expect to be there for your employees as a business owner because you're just like depleted. Right.
Right. So, I mean, energy to do all that.
Yeah. And I know when we were coming up with the philosophy for this podcast, that was a lot of things that we talked and thought about. It's like, hey, you know, you really have to, you know, master yourself and master the things that you do in order to, you know, not only help yourself, but help everybody else. And so there's five of these thinking traps that hopefully we'll get a chance to cover all of them tonight in some detail. And I'll start off just by listing them just to get people's thinking caps on. And some of them, there's honestly not much to them, just the name of it, right? And so it's kind of, I know when the professor online said them, I was like, okay, a couple of them are self-explanatory, but the other ones, I'm like, I have no idea what the hell, you know, what kind of thinking trap is that? Because it's a very, you know, short word or two. Professor listed out the five thinking traps, and when she listed them out, some of them were self-explanatory. It's like, okay, I can see where this is going. And other ones were one word descriptions of the thinking traps. And I was like, okay, that's intriguing, but I have no clue. So I'll list them out and then maybe I'll have you see what you think on, you know, which ones are, hey, I kind of get that, or which ones are, I have no idea where this is going. So I'll just list them out. So the first one is mind reading. The second one's me, like M-E, and then them. Is the third one, catastrophizing is the fourth one, and five is helplessness. So those are the five thinking traps.
Okay.
So, you know, and I would say for me, when I heard, you know, mind reading, catastrophizing, and helplessness, I was like, okay, I can kind of, my mind can jump ahead before I've been presented the material and I can see, you know, what kind of traps. But the me and them, I'm like, okay, that's like it's too thin. I don't know where that's going. Yeah, so but we'll talk about those. So these are the five things we're gonna focus on tonight. All right. So
Yeah, those all, and I guess if somebody's listening to this, what you want to be doing is thinking, do you fall into any of these traps, thought traps? You know, that's the kind of, I think, lesson in this as we go through this is we probably all, to one extent or the other, unless we're very, very disciplined with our thought process, at some point in our lives have probably experienced one of these major ones. And I have a feeling there's more than just these, but these are probably the big ones.
Oh yeah, and they had to. I think the reason why that they focused on these five is because they had very good clinical multiple study examples of these being problems for resilience and creating anxiety. So it was really neat to
All
hear.
right, so they actually have research that backs up
Yeah.
that, like, these are things that, and hopefully things that you can do about that.
Yeah, and the cool thing about it is they actually had two different research scientists, two well-respected doctors that, look at these things in different ways, but they came to similar conclusions. And, any scientific method, whether it's an experiment or this case, kind of a, clinical psychology, it's like if you can, have two different models that are kind of testing for the same things and you come with similar results, you're like, okay, we came up with this on our own in a vacuum, separate from each other. So it's a
Right.
pretty good indicator that, like you said, there's way more than this, but these five have a lot of meat behind them.
Right.
So the mind reading one is just like what it portrays in the title. So it's assuming that what another person is thinking, or even the flip side of that, expecting that the other person knows what you're thinking or talking about, right? So just the intro to that, I mean, I'm sure you can think of some ways that that causes problems, right?
Gosh, I don't myself personally. I don't think I do a ton of mind reading as far as like I generally just, but I can see it in myself personally. Probably at some point or another, I've kind of thought, hey, I bet they're thinking this, and I really don't know that, you know. Certainly, we all can do that at some point or the other. But I can tell you, I've heard a lot of stories from patients that come to me. That, you know, they'll be stressed about something or anxious or upset about some situation or some aspect of their work or their relationships, and I'll say, hey, so tell me about that, you know, just get a little feel for it. And they'll start telling me about, you know, well, my boss, he thinks this and he thinks that, and you know, and or my husband thinks this or thinks that, and everyone thinks this about me, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm kind of scratching my head and just kind of listening to this, you know. And then at some point I have to kind of point out, are like, have they told you that? Did they actually say that to you? Well, no, but I just know that's what they're thinking. And it's like, whoa, whoa, pump the brakes, first off, because I'm not sure that, you know, that is exactly what they may be thinking. And I, you know, sometimes I play that devil's advocate where I'll just kind of go, well, you know, another way to think about this might be that they're doing this behavior because of this is their need or whatever. It may not have anything to do with their thinking negatively about you or, you know, that type of thing. But I think it's pretty easy, based on my clinical experience with people, to fall into this thinking everyone else is, you know, thinking something different. And I guess it might be kind of like what public speaking comes to mind. Imagine, you know, some people are deathly afraid of public speaking, and usually it's because they're afraid that people will think something negative about them, or they have some preconceived notion that you know, everyone's going to think differently of them or look at them in some funny way. And the reality is, I think that I always try to remember what, because I do a lot of public speaking, but I always try to remember, like, they're all worried about their own situation. They're not worried about what I'm doing, or they're not thinking anything about me. They're thinking about themselves, you know?
Well,
But, yeah.
I mean, you hit on a lot of the key components of why this can be such an anxiety fueling thinking trap, right? Because usually when you're doing this mind reading, this negative mind reading game, you're assuming that somebody else that you're dealing with is thinking something ill or something negative about you,
Right.
Because obviously, I mean, that would be cool, but most of us are not looking at somebody, especially in a professional setting, you're thinking, I bet they think I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah, unless
it's
you're
like,
delusional in that way.
Yeah, yeah. Then you're like a narcissist. Like, yeah, you walk into a room, it's like, everybody likes the way I did my hair this morning. It's it's like you're bald, so I don't know what that means. You know, they like the way you did your hair this morning. But I mean, the slippery slope on this is like, if you are already assuming that you know what they're thinking, and oftentimes that they're thinking something ill of you, or there's a potential that they are thinking negative of you, then it can create so many, like the definition of this whole exercise we're doing, a thinking trap. Because once you get into that negative loop, it opens up so many rabbit holes, and none of them are good.
Well, it kind of ties in with a little bit of stuff that we went over with Rex Howells, is the, you know, one can assume that something, you can take the assumption that people are thinking something negative about you, or you can also take the assumption that there's a positive, there's always a positive flip side to everything. So I think the mind trap also kind of makes me think a lot about the fact that people tend to be a little bit, you know, negative. I think there can be a tendency to be negative in the expectations around them.
Yeah, and inevitably, because we talk about it and think about it and read about it so often, Stoic examples come to mind, right? I don't have some of my Stoic references in front of me like I normally do, or I would pull it out, but one of the things that this mind or thinking trap conjures up is, you know, don't attribute malice to situations where ignorance could just as soon be the cause of it, right?
Right.
Because, you know, and that happens, I think, way too much now with email communications and text message, for God's sakes, right?
Oh,
I mean, how many times have you gotten a text from, you know, your wife or a colleague, and you're like, what the F does this mean? You know? And then you call them up, and they're like, oh, no. Or it could have been a typo, and autocorrect changed the entire context of it. And, you know, that's what you just did. You attributed malice to something that, you know, was just like an ignorant, you know, oversight.
Right.
So, I think this is terrible when, you know, and what we're dealing with now, where there's so much Zoom communication and, you know, telecons where you can't see, I mean, you can hear people, but you can't get all the body language and the context that you need to get the full communication picture, right? So,
right. Absolutely.
So, you know, that one is, I think, common and straightforward. So I'll move on to the next one. The me trap, if you will. So in this case, you believe that you are the sole cause for everything that's going wrong. You know, every problem, is my fault. So, Jocko would say that good, probably, because, you know, take extreme ownership of it, right? So
right.
That's a positive way to deal with a me trap. But, you know, if you believe you're the sole cause of anything that's going wrong. Now, I think the key part of this, and I remember that the professor emphasized it, it's soul. Yeah, so that means, you know, you are the cause. There's not other mitigating causes. So you think about how negative that is. Like, if something is falling apart and you say, this is my fault, even though there's 20 people, you know, say involved on a project, you know, and you're just one team of teams. But if you automatically say, if something goes wrong, like you feel responsible for it. So it can be good if you're taking kind of that Jocko extreme ownership approach, but you can't, you know, fall down that slippery slope of saying, hey, you know, I'm the sole cause. Because you think about it, there's probably very few things where, you know, you are the sole cause of something that's a team effort. I mean, it's possible, but even if it is a failure that's your fault, it's probably a narrow piece of it and not necessarily causing the entire thing to fail. And I guess the ultimate problem is, you know, you believe that you're causing like harm to others, and you're causing, you know, a bigger project or a bigger effort to fail. So
I can resonate a lot with this. I had a really quick, funny, I wanted to back up though. when you were mentioning the on the last one on the mind reading trap, when you were mentioning something about ignorance, you know, other people maybe
malice or ignorance.
Yeah, it actually is. I remember hearing that quote somewhere, so I looked it up real quick.
Yes,
I think it's attributed to Napoleon Bonaparte, and it says never ascribe to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity.
I softened it.
So I thought that was pretty funny. On the me trap, I can resonate with this one. Of the ones that I've seen on the little short list that we're going over, I probably resonate the most with this. Now, I feel like I've got more like insight that I don't sit there going, "It is all my fault," and you know, I don't feel like I get to that point. But I do tend to, in a lot of ways, maybe it's just I attribute a lot of things around me to my own. I take responsibility for a lot of things around me. So if my environment is not going the way it should, or a relationship, or this or that, I look at myself first and go, "Man, it must have been something I screwed up there." You know, I had that tendency to do that, and how am I going to fix that? And I go into fix it up mode, and so I resonate with that one. I can see that, like, that's one that I probably, if I don't have tools and strategies for watching for that thought process, I can probably fall down that rabbit hole a little ways at times, and probably have throughout my life.
Yeah, I think personal examples for me that are a nightmare where I've totally gone down this road was some of its context. I mean, I'm always hard on myself, but I think when you have an event to plan for and execute, it's a nightmare, right? Because if you are senior or somewhat senior in an event planning setup, it's a nightmare for this trap, because you're ultimately the coordinator or the leader responsible for it. But as you well know, you know, probably having planned and executed different events in your time and your, you know, practice and the various endeavors that you've done, it's like you can't foresee everybody's piece of the pie. Like, you can have like a, you know, we would call it a confirmation brief, where, you know, you sit there at a table and you walk through, and you've probably done something similar with your staff. Like, you're executing something and you look them in the eye and say, well, and you can't, I mean, you can come up with checklists and you can, you know, be a micromanager in this case, in these cases, but it's very difficult when you have a multifaceted event that's very time sensitive, right?
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to train people and say, hey, you know, we need to get better at customer service, or we need to get better, you know, you can talk in generalities, but then when you're, you know, planning an event that's like, you know, a one and done thing, you know, we're going to start at 8 o'clock, you know, on Saturday morning, this is going to happen. I mean, it's a nightmare if you're in charge of it. And I'll say the other part, one other thing that, I fell into this trap for sure is, preparing for military inspections, right? And there's these things called functional area inspections, and some of them are narrowly focused and say, like, you know, I guess we'd say a tight swim lane that you're responsible for, like, you know, one department, you know,
right.
And that is bad enough, but in one case where I was the second in command of a squadron, it's like all functional areas. And so it's like admin, it's like, you know, intel and security clearances, it's, you know, hazardous materials. It's like the entire gamut of programs and things in an entire squadron. And so as the XO, you're kind of like you're like the mayor, you know, or you're right. like the city manager, I guess you'd say. Maybe the CEO is like the mayor, maybe you're the city manager, you know, so you're make sure the trains run on time. And so you're sitting there looking at these detailed checklists, and sometimes the rank is a sergeant, sometimes the rank is a, you know, a captain or a major. And so, like, you're filing these people in and out of your office, like, over a period of 3 or 4 months. And that's a complete nightmare, because you're essentially responsible for, you know, whether or not, you know, the inspector general comes through and, you know, reviews everything and say, hey, you know, you have an exemplary set of programs, or they're noteworthy, or you need improvement, or everybody needs to be fired. You know, there's not a lot of degrees of separation from ultimate success to, you know, you're fired.
Right.
And so those are just two examples of where, Sometimes a situation it almost dictates where you got to be careful because this mind trap is almost a built-in pitfall, you know.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
So I'll move on to the next one. So the next one is almost the flip side of the me trap, and it's just called them. So as you can probably assume, so the them trap is you believe that other people or a circumstance is the sole cause of, setbacks and problems. So in the me trap, it's your fault. And every problem and every setback is caused by other people or other circumstance in the them trap. So, in a lot of ways, I think this one is almost more dangerous. I don't know what you think, but.
Yeah, and actually, I don't resonate with this one myself personally. I rarely will blame others for, like, I don't think I do. I rarely will. I'm more prone to take responsibility for something not going right in my environment than I am to blame others typically. And but I and I think that because I'm very alert to this particular issue. So I see it when I see somebody making that, well, so and so did this, because I work in an office where, there's all kinds of, different, there's all these different, there's 25 different employees and they all interact with each other in different ways. And generally they all get along pretty good. But in any environment like that, you're going to have, factions and this and that, and, different things that come up and everybody has a differing opinion about something. And when I start seeing something not working right, there's some folks that will kind of jump in, and it's first to, well, if that person, that person. And if you're if one person is, let's say you're having problems with everyone around you, like you're constantly having problems, the common denominator is usually you.
I was thinking,
And I always kind of think along those lines like that.
Well, I was gonna say, you brought up the more unfiltered negative version of the quote that I was bastardizing before.
Right.
So that now I'll do it on this one. So there's a saying that I've heard before, and I'm sure there's different versions of it in the Marine Corps. It's like if you always think everybody around you is an asshole in different situations, that means you're the asshole. It's like it's 100%. You
Yeah.
can't be you can't move across the country and be in all these different contexts. You're like, so-and-so's an asshole. So-and-so, it's like, you know what? You're the a-hole,
From a
So.
psychological perspective, too, if you compare the me trap and the them trap, it's really one. It's really one is a low confidence thing psychologically. The other is sort of the narcissistic end of it. If you're recognizing everything as like everyone around me is incompetent, they just don't do their jobs. If you're that guy, and you're not seeing that you're a common denominator in many of these situations. I think there's a balance between those, and I think the healthy way to negotiate a them trap is to back up from that and maybe try to be more objective about what you're seeing and listen to maybe another person's perspective or look at motives. I've heard that said a lot. Look at motives of what other people are doing, that type of thing. But just flatly falling into like everything around you happening that's not your responsibility and it's everyone else's, that's definitely one that doesn't fly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure all of us have worked with people that fit into the category, or they say, the Teflon Don, because nothing ever sticks to
Nothing
them, right?
sticks, right?
And some people are just masters at that. And maybe I've never thought about it as a narcissistic thing, but it really probably is at least a tendency, because if you think it's never your fault and you always have a quick excuse to blame the heat on, or you put the heat on somebody else. I mean, that's what it is. You're saying, it can't be me because I got my stuff together.
Right.
And you're never willing to look, inwardly and have some humility about it. But I think that if you're a leader, especially, or a manager, even at a modest level, this is very dangerous, and I know it's one of the first things we learned about is, you are responsible for everything that you're assigned, unit of whatever size, what they do or, fail to do. And that's powerful when you realize what that really means, especially in the case of like, hey, if you're a lieutenant and you're like private first class accidentally kills a civilian, you know, in a combat situation, you are responsible for that.
Right.
And so we did a lot of, you know, ethical scenarios and decision games and things where you're like, wow, I mean, how is that possible? You know, he pulled the trigger or she pulled the trigger.
Right.
And it's like, well, you know, like, did you train them properly in these scenarios? Did you do kind of like battle drills? Did you have standard operating procedures on, you know, dealing with civilians, or, you know, rules of engagement? You know, did you bring a lawyer in and made sure they realized that they couldn't shoot unless they were fired upon? You know, so all these things, and there's a difference between responsibility and culpability, right? So culpability would be like, hey, you know, you may not go to jail, but the PFC may go to jail because
right.
they, you know, killed somebody in cold blood. Now you may get relieved of your command and not get promoted, but you're not going to go to jail. So, I mean,
right.
you know, that was a hard thing. I remember when I was a lieutenant, I had a corporal and, multiple levels down from me. And I was like the second in charge of the department at the time, that was like stealing radios and like selling them on eBay. And that was like the first, you know, I guess thing that happened, or one of the first things are like, oh my God, you know, and I definitely got inside my own head into a thinking trap, and I was like, okay, you know, my career's over because, you know, I had a felon in my midst, you know,
right.
and it was a big deal because the radios, you know, and the kid was an idiot, obviously, but they look like regular, nice Motorola handheld walkie-talkies, but what he didn't know is because they were supposed to be for a flying squadron for a deployed environment, so they had encryption capability on them. Yeah, so they looked like, you know, the run-of-the-mill nice radios that you could probably buy at the time at Radio Shack, but because it had that encryption capability and the logic built inside of it, well, now you just sold a controlled asset to God knows who. And thankfully, an NCIS agent they have them, you know, like the FBI does, just like scouring, you know, these different sites for things that are potentially military application.
Right.
And so the kid didn't know what he was doing. And so the NCIS agent said, hey, could you give me like the model numbers or maybe a serial number off a couple of them so I can make sure, you know, what the specs are on it and everything, because I'm going to use
yeah.
it for. And so it's a NCIS agent, and sure, it matches up to the list of these like serial numbers that are only the encrypted ones. And then they busted him. So, yeah. And so I was like probably doing too much of the me thinking trap on that one, saying, you know, it's my fault. How could I,
right.
you know, and but it was, you know, there's certain things like, hey, you can't control. It's just like if you have a Marine, you know, pop positive on a drug test or get a DUI. I mean, there's going to be heat on you as a leader saying, hey, you know, what, you know, who is this guy? You know, did you notice any weird signs? You know, when's
right.
the last time? So, you know, these are things as a leader that are powerful. But the them one is like, if you are a leader and you fall too much in that category, in that thinking trap, then that's a problem because you're probably not taking enough responsibility for the things that are, you know, under your control.
You said something at the beginning of that you said that's a very dangerous one, the them trap. I agree with that because it really, if a person doesn't recognize, if they're blaming everyone else around them and their environment for, you know, things that they might have a role in, that shows a lack of insight. It shows a lack of not knowing themselves very well, or it shows that they might not see their own blind spots. And we've talked about that, you know, in other shows, you know, kind of how do we know where our blind spots are, and, you know, and partially from the tribe standpoint, you know, we got to surround ourselves with people that help us understand what our blind spots are and help us be stronger. But I agree with that. That's if you can't see how your role is in another situation, I think that's a dangerous lack of insight. So it makes that one a little bit more dangerous for sure.
Yeah. So I'm going to move on to the next one.
Yeah.
And I think that this one is dangerous in a different way, because I think this one, if you get wrapped up too much in it, it can really sow seeds of anxiety and even, you know, to the point of some kind of neurosis, because it's really negative, and it's the catastrophizing thinking trap. So, so in that case, it's you're wasting energy. And I think the term she used was ruminating, not something you often hear, but, you know, ruminating, you know, essentially going round and round on worst case outcomes of a situation.
Right.
So something happens and it, you know, and another term I don't like a lot because it's overused, but it triggers something inside you. And now your mind is like on a runaway course to worse and worse things that are going to happen. So if you're ruminating on all those irrational worst case scenario, then, you know, it's a huge energy and time suck at a minimum, right? So
I think this is the catastrophizing trap, to me, is like the gateway. Like the gateway to catastrophizing trap is like constant negative thinking. You know, if somebody,
yeah.
If you're always kind of looking for a negative outcome, or you're looking like, you know, you have the attitude, the world's not going to work for me, everything's against me. If your blanket attitude is negative, that leads very easily down the road of catastrophizing. I see this one a lot in the people I interact with as patients, and it is most certainly lies. It's a faulty thinking that lies at the base of anxiety and agitation, things like that people experience, insomnia, depression. There's a lot of reasons this happens. And if you listen, I use the term perseverative thought. So perseveration is sort of just when thought continues and repeats itself. Mm-hmm. And that is really, really common, especially when I see people that are suffering with anxiety and depression, is perseverative thought about certain situations. And again, it's always this irrational worst case scenario sometimes. Sometimes it's not irrational. Maybe it's a possible scenario, but it's not the only scenario that could happen. And you know, a good example would be, I have seen, I've seen so many different examples, but maybe one, I've seen people that recently I was treating for COVID-19 via telemedicine, right? The patient has been sick 5 to 7 days, has a improving cough, does not have fever, you know, and they're like, but there was a delay in getting the results of their test. So the visit starts out with, I understand you've been sick recently and we did a COVID-19 test on you. You're getting better, correct? Oh yeah, I'm getting better. My cough is better and I really don't even have fever anymore. And then I go, we just found out your test was positive. And I've literally watched people have a panic attack and like start hyperventilating in front of me. And
it's because the world is focused on it right now, right?
That's right. It's like they've heard all these things and they think that suddenly, oh my God, you know, I'm gonna be on a ventilator in the next 2 days. And I mean, literally, I had to tell them just stop for a moment, breathe, because I thought they were gonna fall out of their chair backwards. And I remember thinking, but listen to what you need. The facts of this situation are that you've had a positive test and you're improving. And 99.9% of people do just the same. Mm-hmm. And that's what you have to focus on. And finally, you know, as they come back from the ledge and, you know, that, but it was sad to me, but you can tell that they were prepared. They had been ruminating, was the term that you used. They had been ruminating on all the negativity and all the things that were happening rather than the actual facts of their physical condition. I could go on and on about different examples of that, but that is something I don't find myself terribly, you know, sensitive to this particular trap or susceptible to it, but I'm sure I have at some point. One thing I also wanted to mention about this, Tim Ferriss talks about this a lot. He's talked about this in his work, 4-Hour Work Week and others. He talked about it in the 4-Hour Work Week in great detail about how it was destroying his health. He was just anxiety and all these things. And outwardly he had all this success, but he would look at every scenario, and he has a funny few sequences in his book where he goes through how, you know, I could travel the world and I could be on an exotic beach and something's going to happen with my business back home, and then a dog's going to bite me in the face. And, you know, he would have all these different scenarios that would have, you know, in his mind. And he had to come up with tools to deal with it because it was literally paralyzing him with anxiety and things like that. So this is one I can definitely relate to from a perspective of a lot of the folks that I treat So it's a dangerous one for sure.
You know what's funny is I and my wife like makes fun of me because I can deal with extreme situations calmly and way better than I can with sometimes with like little mundane things that I do this mind trap with, which is completely ridiculous. You know, like if somebody, you know, like when my wife is diagnosed with cancer, or, you know, I've had things obviously happen with my job as a Marine, you know, being deployed in combat. And I find that I'm maybe because of the severity of the situation, or maybe my training has prepared me better for dealing with, you know, big situations where I know I'm forced to not catastrophize because people are depending on me. Whereas if it's something simple, like I have the freedom, if you will, to catastrophize. And it's like, given the freedom to catastrophize, sometimes I will do so. Right. And especially when it comes to my health, because, I've been thankful that I've been so healthy, you know, my entire life. And, you know, I've never had any, I mean, I told my wife, I said, I'm going to prepare you now, 'cause I'm going to be the worst patient ever. I've never had a surgery. I've never had a surgery of any kind. I've never spent the night in the hospital. And I'm like 46 years old, and so I'm like, it's going to happen, obviously. Hopefully it's nothing, you know, extreme or severe. But I've told my wife, I said, I'm going to warn you, I'm probably going to be the biggest hypochondriac baby, you know, and think it's like, I'm going to have a blood clot, you know, something's going to happen. So,
yeah.
You know, you hit on some of the other, you know, key points where I think the worst parts of this thinking trap are that you see threats, are much bigger than they actually are. And at the same time, the flip side of this is like, because you're seeing that it's so big and overwhelming, you know, thus the name catastrophizing, you're underestimating your own ability and resources to cope with any piece of it.
Right.
So that's where it becomes, you know, neurotic, and that's where it becomes anxiety riddled and can probably even lead to depression because you think you're never going to get out of it. And, you know, they had some cool little vignettes that they acted out in this class where, you know, a guy had to give a presentation, and also his father had a cancer or biopsy or, you know, test to come back. And so he was like, I have to give a presentation, and I'm not going to find out the results of my dad's biopsy to see if it's cancer before I give the presentation. So the whole time, you know, I'm thinking that this is really important, and because my dad probably has cancer and is going to die, and I'm going to lose my job, so I'm not going to be able to help him. So, I mean, those are two very real, you know, understandable things where you could catastrophize, but you have to because you are aware, and we're talking, like you and I are talking about this and hopefully coaching some people out there, I know it helped me, that you self-identify like, hey, I know what I'm doing to myself. I need to stop. I need to be logical and realize that, you know, it's probably not going to be the worst case scenario. It may not be the best case scenario, but a high percentage of the time, it's probably going to be somewhere in the middle, and I have resources to cope with it.
Yeah, we've talked about this type of thing in past episodes. When I hear all of that, I think be present in the present moment.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about Eckhart Tolle. I've quoted him many times on the power of now. And when someone is catastrophizing things and they're running, their mind is running amok with all the different disaster scenarios, those things are all potentially in the future, or they're things that are not here in the present now. And it's much better to be focused on what is happening right now at this moment. And it has a calming effect to stay as close as you can to the present timeline. Otherwise you're sort of imagining things that may or may not ever happen. Or as I've often said, that thing might be positive that happens in the future. There's an equal possibility that it could be positive, not just negative.
Well, and I'll say, foreshadowing to our strategies to cope with it next episode or two, Mindfulness is one of the antidotes to a lot of these, because you think, just like you said, I mean, if you focus on, you know, the things you can do in the next half hour, the things you're doing right now, you're not overwhelmed by the things you can't cope with, because you know that there's things that you can cope with right in front of you, you know? Exactly. And so that's essentially the antidote. So I'll get to the last one, and, somewhat related, I think, but helplessness. So, you know, this thinking trap is when you believe that a negative event is going to impact all areas of your life and you're not going to have any control over it. So there's also another, thinking trap or a style of defining thinking traps that we may talk about next time called explanatory style. So in that explanatory style, it's seeing something like helplessness that it's a global and a stable problem. So that's the way it kind of defines it, where it's like this event is not only, discrete in affecting what it is, it's going to affect everything, and it's stable, which means, like, you know, you don't have any control over changing it. So it's going to stay that way forever. It we'll probably talk about that next time, but if it's global and it's stable, that's like the worst case scenario. It's like affecting everything global and it's stable, meaning you can't change it. And so that's where this helplessness thinking trap can really, put you in a bad place, right? So it's a belief that bad things are here to stay and there's nothing you can do about it. So that's kind of what
I kind of think about. The classic one I was thinking about was, like, you know, in high school where, like, everybody's going to take their SAT or their, you know, in college entrance exams or something.
Yeah.
And there's always that one guy or, you know, that's like, man, if I don't score a perfect score, I'm not going to be able to get into Harvard or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? And then if I don't get into Harvard, then I won't get into medical school. And, you know, and there's a, I remember, I think the closer you get to the razor's edge as a type A personality, the more likely, some of these scenarios will fly in. I remember student friends of mine, in fact, it was kind of funny. In my study group, I used to be like, it would annoy them that the night before major exams, we would study usually like 12 to 14 hours, you know, a day before exams. But at some point I would always, you know, be like midnight and I'm like, hey guys, I'm going to go do a quick workout, go take a hot shower, and I'm going to get some sleep. And it would freak out the other people.
Like, I can't believe he's doing that. He's giving up.
Why are you doing that? And they would. Their theory was, if you drink enough coffee and stay awake, you won't forget things when you sleep. Which, of course, makes no medical sense whatsoever.
No.
Actually, because sleep is our memories are, you know, formed in sleep.
Yeah, but you sleep after all the studying, and it bakes it in there. So.
Yeah, but I remember this, the when you tying it back into the helpless trap.
Yeah.
They were if they didn't, I remember they would say it out loud, and this is probably in a caffeine sleep deprived delirium, but they would say things like, if I don't score well on this biochem exam in medical school, I'll never be an orthopedic surgeon or something, you know, because they felt like they, you know, their whole life was like, and I just remember, fortunately, I think it's because I would get some sleep and actually go exercise sometimes, you know, and not to say I wasn't stressed out too, but at the same time, being around that, I remember hearing people say things like that. I'll never get the residency I want. Therefore, you know, they had this whole line of sort of a hodgepodge of helplessness and catastrophe.
My high maintenance girlfriend's going to leave me because she expects me to be an orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah.
But
it was like, it's like, as I'm listening to all these mind traps, it was like, you know, a combination of three or four of them all in a big stew, you know?
So. Oh, geez. And some of this is built into our human nature.
Yeah.
And honestly, and some of it is the way that we're probably going to talk about it tonight. But I was pleasantly, I guess, not surprised, but it was a pleasant thing to hear that our physiological responses that we have to a lot of these things are part of our protective mechanisms, right? As humans, that go way back to where we were, you know, sprinting away from saber-toothed tigers, right? You know, so,
right.
But the problem is our minds are so powerful that our bodies, you know, can't differentiate between a real or perceived threat. And so I guess one of the things I want to leave people with before we get into the strategies next time is that Hey, if you're having physiological responses, heart palpitations, panic attacks, things like that, feeling like tightness in your chest that you don't usually feel, breaking out in a sweat, feeling flushed, it's okay. So if you start to feel that, remember what we're talking about today and say these thinking traps are causing my body to have a fight or flight response, and I just have to know and recognize it and have ways to cope and get myself out of it, I guess. So,
Right.
yeah,
When you
so.
were saying that, I was just thinking, I'll put in the show notes for this episode, I'll put a link to an article. It's a fairly long article I wrote on the NRG tribe, on the topic of stress. And the reason it ties in is you mentioned something very, very important to all of this. These thoughts can be translated into chemical events in our body.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
that's where the physical findings come from. Why do people get anxious? Because their cortisol levels rise, and their cortisol causes their sugar to rise, and it causes their heart rate to rise, and their blood pressure to rise, and then they get some physical findings because of that. And I go through and kind of explain why that's, like that maybe has served a caveman, but it doesn't serve us all the time when we have this, endless psychological stress and other types of stress that we impose upon ourselves in the modern world. So I think it's a good, I like to use it as a good reference for patients that I treat when they talk about how, if I mention, hey, I think stress is affecting your health, this is the article. So I'll put a link in the show notes on that, and it'll, or maybe help explain that link that can lead to those physical symptoms.
Yeah, well, that's all I had for this kind of defining the topic. So, I guess the last thing I'll say about it is I know this helped me be more mindful of the traps that I get myself into and the negative responses I can have, both, mental and physical responses. So, just be aware of it and know that that doesn't make you, weird or inferior. Actually, by recognizing it's going to make you, be able to perform better in situations where you're getting into these traps. So, look forward to, talking about solutions probably on the next episode.
Yeah, I think we definitely need to come back with hard, kind of solutions for a lot of these. I think that would be very helpful. This is a good topic. I enjoyed it, Chris.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Everybody take care and look us up and recommend some topics on the Future Focus Health Network and specifically in the WFO Live podcast tribe inside of there.
Yeah, that's been, I've noticed more and more people joining in there. I'd look forward to those conversations, and talk to you next week, Chris.
Yeah, sounds good.